Hi everyone, my name is Sejal Parikh and I'll be your host today. Welcome to our podcast, Precision Bites, talking with patients about weight management. This is a podcast series of simulated clinic encounters dealing with motivational interviewing and weight management in different social contexts. Today, the provider is talking with Alex, a 12-year-old boy and his mom. Alex's BMI has been in the 95th percentile for a couple visits now, so the provider called him and his mom back for a weight follow-up. Of note, the whole family sees the provider, mom, dad, brother, everyone, and all members of this family are obese. Part 1, Encountering Resistance.
Hi, Alex. How are you today?
Good.
Great. Who have you brought with you today?
Mom.
Hi, Mom. How are you?
Hi, Doctor. So you asked us to come back for another visit? At his physical, you said you wanted to talk about Alex's weight. What's wrong with his weight?
Yeah, thanks for coming in. So, I record Alex's weight every time he comes to see me. And I've been seeing a trend that I wanted to talk to you about. What do you think about Alex's weight?
I think he's fine. Big and healthy, the way kids should be.
Yes, Alex is a great kid. But I wanted to talk to you today because Alex's BMI has been greater than the 95th percentile for his weight for his last three visits.
Wait, what's BMI?
BMI tells you how your weight compares to your height. So, for example, most people who are 5 feet tall should weigh a certain amount to be healthy.
Oh.
Wait, I thought BMI was a number.
Yeah, you're right that BMI is a number for adults. Since kids change so much as they grow, we don't give them a BMI number per se, but a percentile comparing them to the average kid. So the average kid will be 50th percentile.
So isn't 95th percentile good? He's close to the top.
Well, remember, BMI takes into account weight for Alex's height. So he weighs more than 95% of other kids his height.
Pearl 1, Encountering Resistance. Opening the encounter about a child's weight can be tricky. Two major challenges in this part of the encounter are 1, speaking the same language, and 2, preconceived notions. So, speaking the same language means that the patient and their family know what you want to talk about and understand the words you're using. Be upfront about why the patient is called back into your clinic. Don't forget to communicate key information, such as current BMI and recent weight trends. One study compared doctors' progress notes to audiotape patient encounters in a pediatric weight clinic. This study found that 15% of the time, doctors did not assess the patient's BMI or communicate this information to the patient. Also, while most patients understand words like healthy and unhealthy, BMI percentiles can be tricky. You can explain these words in a sentence or two and set a good tone for the rest of the meeting. Remember to speak the same language. Let the patient know what you want to talk about and explain your terms. The second major challenge is preconceived notions about health. This is one of the main challenges of pediatrics, and specifically when talking about kids' weight. It is critical to understand that almost universally, thin kids are thought to be unhealthy or malnourished. What parents think of as healthy can be much higher than a normal BMI. In fact, a meta-analysis in 2014 reviewed about 70 studies that enrolled more than 15,000 kids and parents. The meta-analysis showed that about half of parents underestimated their child's weight when the child was overweight or obese, and many parents misidentified a normal weight. This is important because providers can be susceptible to these unconscious biases as well. Remember, the visual BMI, or the child's weight just based on the appearance, is often wrong. We encourage you to evaluate and communicate numbers such as BMI points and percentiles. The CDC classifies kids in the 85th to 95th BMI percentile as at risk of being overweight, and kids greater than the 95th BMI percentile as overweight. Finally, many providers worry about offending parents and children or causing children to worry too much about their weight. In a study of over 400 parents, researchers found that parents react better to phrases such as unhealthy weight and unhealthy BMI, and worse to words like heavy, cuddly, chubby, extremely obese, and fat. remember to emphasize that you care about the child's health and not their appearance. You won't offend anyone if you're sensitive in your wording, emphasize health over looks, and keep it fact-oriented. Part 2, involving the patient.
Okay, I see what your graph says, but Alex looks fine to me. I looked just like that at his age.
Alex, what do you think about what we're talking about?
What?
What do you think about this conversation about your weight?
Nothing.
Do you wish anything was different about your weight, or are you happy with the way things are?
What makes people fat?
Weight is a combination of habits, environment, and genetics. It's not just one of them. We can always do something to be healthier.
Do you think I have to, lose weight?
What do you think? Do you like the weight that you're at?
No.
Why not?
Some kids at school call me fat.
What? I'm gonna call your principal today. That's not okay.
Mom, I know this is hard to hear, but it's probably harder for Alex to talk about, so let's just let him finish.
I don't want to keep talking if she's going to freak out.
Alex, I think your mom just wants to protect you. It's her way of showing that she cares for you.
Whatever.
Okay, so you were telling us about school.
Well, some kids call me fat at PE, and I'm always picked last for teams.
I'm sorry. How do those things make you feel?
Bad.
I understand. I want you to know that this isn't about how you look. I just want you to be healthy.
Pearl 2, involving the patient. Motivational interviewing is hard, and it's even harder with children. But first, let's recap what motivational interviewing is. So, motivational interviewing is a communication style that uses the patient's own motivations to stimulate behavior change. A large randomized trial of 42 clinics and about 650 patients has shown that motivational interviewing is effective in decreasing BMI in the setting of pediatric obesity. One of the tenets of motivational interviewing is asking open-ended questions and letting the patient talk. Let's be honest, asking preteens or teens open-ended questions can feel frustrating and low yield. Be ready for lots of pauses, mmms, I don't knows. This is normal. That being said, asking those open-ended questions is important, as these questions get patients thinking about their own emotions and motivations. Once motivations, or what kids want or are scared of, are vocalized, you can easily use these motivations to anchor the rest of the conversation. Put another way, figuring out the patient's hopes and fears is the first step of getting the patient to change. Motivational interviewing is particularly difficult in the pediatric setting, as there are effectively two patients, the parent and the child. With sensitive topics such as weight, it's easy for parents and children to misunderstand each other and become angry. We recommend that the provider use short reframing statements to decrease the amount of misunderstanding. For example, when Alex doesn't want to talk anymore after his mom interrupts, it's important to remind him that everyone is at this appointment to support him. In a similar vein, it is important to engage the child, sometimes at the expense of talking with a parent. Research shows that children are engaged in less than 20% of communication during the typical pediatric appointment. Research also shows that communicating directly with children increases trust and empowers them to be actively involved in their care. Simple statements you can use include, "Oh, let's finish one thought. Alex, do you want to go first and then your mom can see her point?" Or, "It seems like everyone has something to say. Who wants to go first?" Finally, one of the challenges of using motivational interviewing at the pediatric level is that kids are not uniform in their ability to introspect. A child's chronological age or physical maturity is not indicative of his or her emotional maturity and ability to answer questions about motivation. Try to tailor your level of follow-up based on your previous interaction with the child. Typically, by repeating a question about motivation 2 to 3 times, you will be able to understand how much your pediatric patient can vocalize. Part 3, linking desires to behavior change.
Alex, thanks for telling me about how you feel. I know that can be hard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to ask you a couple more questions about this.
More?
I promise, it'll be quick.
Fine.
What are things that you want to be different in PE?
I don't want to go.
Well, you have to go to PE, so ideally, what do you want to be different?
I don't want kids to call me fat.
What else?
I don't want to be picked last.
What else?
I don't, want to be the last kid who finishes the mile.
Okay. Anything else?
I want muscles.
Okay. This is a good list of things you want to be different. What are things you think you can change to help you get these things?
Well, I don't know.
So, we all know the basics of nutrition. Eat more fruits and vegetables and exercise more. The real challenge is finding out how to do that in your life, how to change your day-to-day to be healthier. So, Alex, what are some things you think you could change?
I don't know.
I'm sure you have some ideas.
You know, Alex always...
Mom, I do want to hear your ideas, but first, can we let Alex come up with some? Just so we know what he's thinking about? He's going to need these skills when he goes to college, right? Okay, Alex, what do you think?
I don't know.
You know yourself best. What do you think you could change?
Well, Mom always cooks bacon for breakfast.
Alex, it's not every day.
Alex, this isn't about blaming. We are all here because we want you to run a faster mile. So, what are some changes that you think will help you?
Pearl 3, linking desires to behavior change. Like we said before, motivational interviewing is hard. It can cause some hurt feelings between kids and their parents. Practice being neutral and reframing the interactions between preteens and their parents. Once you've elicited patients' positive and negative motivations, the next step is to link those motivations to behavior change. In this section, the provider asked Alex what he can change. This is an advanced question for kids, but it is important to start empowering your preteens to think about these things. Be sure to emphasize patient autonomy. Use statements like, "You already know that," and "You know yourself best," to help patients feel in charge of their health. If patients feel like they are in charge of their health and are able to make changes, they're more likely to do so. Finally, limit the amount of information you offer. This is all about letting the patient come up with the ideas themselves. Most patients know the generic nutrition advice. We all know we need to eat more vegetables and exercise more. Let patients tell you what they think is important for their health and what changes they think they can make. Part 4, diet history and changes.
I drink soda. I heard that was bad.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Soda is not good for you at all. Okay, let's talk to Mom about what else you are eating.
So, breakfast is usually eggs and bacon. My husband really likes bacon. Then, every morning I pack a lunch for Alex. All pretty healthy. Sandwich, lunchable snack, juice. Then Alex walks home from school and makes himself a snack. I think chips and salsa. Something that doesn't involve knives, you know, because that's not safe for kids his age. His older brother comes home a little later and makes some food, too. I don't know what food because he's a teenager. And then we have dinner.
What's for dinner?
Usually meat, some vegetables, rice or pasta. Sometimes something else, but usually that's it. Alex, what did we have yesterday? Aunt Sue came over, right? Aunt Sue's my husband's.
Any dessert?
Yeah, ice cream.
Well, not every night.
Okay. What do you drink with dinner?
My husband likes soda, but I make sure to give the kids juice. We get this special juice from Costco because it has all these added vitamins that you can't get from normal foods, so it's a lot healthier.
Okay, sounds good. Alex, anything else you eat at school?
Sometimes I get pancakes for brunch.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay, Alex. What about after school? What do you eat then?
Usually takis after school with my friends. Then I come home and have milk and cereal.
Okay, got it. Okay, so what do you think about what you're eating?
I don't know.
Do you think there are any other foods or drinks that you could change that would help you run faster?
Well, maybe if we didn't have soda at dinner, that would be better.
Mom, what do you think about that?
I don't know. My husband is really used to soda. But why don't the kids just drink juice instead? I mean, it's this fruit blend that we get. It says it has lots of healthy vitamins and things in it. I mean, it looks really good.
Okay, Mom. I just want to point something out. I think you're doing a great job. It's hard when everyone wants to eat something different.
Thanks. It is really hard.
And I know it's hard to talk about some of these things like soda because Dad isn't here. But I do want to say one thing about juice. You know, juice is marketed as if it's good for kids, but it actually has a lot of unnecessary sugar in it.
Oh, Doc, but not this juice. It's really, really good for...
Okay, Mom. How about you send me a photo of this juice or just bring in a box next time? But in the meantime, I want you to look at the box when you go home and look at the sugar content. Anything over 15 grams in juice is too much.
What?
Kids should be only having 25 grams of sugar a day. Most foods have a little bit of added sugar, so let's assume that all the other things Alex eats has 10 grams of sugar. That's close to nothing. Then he has 15 grams of sugar left for juice.
Okay, but I do think this is good juice.
Okay, just go check the label when you go home. And if it is healthy juice, no more than one cup a day.
I'll see.
Okay, Mom, and we were talking about soda.
Yeah, I don't know. My husband needs soda at every meal.
Okay, I understand. And it's hard because he's not here. We don't want to force him to change his habits without him being here. But I really think this is an opportunity for the whole family to help Alex be healthier. Do you think your husband could stop bringing soda in the house and only drink it when he's out? I say that because, for the most part, kids eat what's available to them. So if we change what's around them, then we can change what they eat.
Okay, I'll see about that.
Okay, think about it. Making some of these changes could really help everyone in the family. And I think it would make Alex feel better too. Okay, Alex, what do you think about your after-school snacks?
I could probably change them.
Yeah, you could. Do you want a list of healthy snacks you can make after school? You could eat that instead of takis and instead of chips and salsa. Mom, Alex is old enough to start some basic food preparation, including holding a knife. He's not too little for that. He'll be careful, right, Alex?
Okay.
Okay.
And the last thing, Alex, if you're getting something at brunch, let's get fruit or a granola bar.
No, but my friends will make fun of me for being girly.
What foods do you think will help you run faster and get bigger muscles?
Probably not pancakes.
Yeah, probably not pancakes. I want you to think about that when you eat. Will this help me run faster? Maybe you could have sliced carrots and celery as a snack instead of brunch.
Pearl 4, Diet History and Changes. The diet history. This can often feel like a Pandora's box of information. And it can be really challenging to navigate the pertinent information. Traditionally, the diet history is taken chronologically, identifying breakfast, lunch, and dinner as main meals. Pediatric obesity is unique, as pediatric patients usually don't have the means to buy all their own food. Determining their access to food is important. Additionally, some foods are marketed specifically to kids, such as juice, flavored milk, and breakfast cereals. Be sure to ask about these. In the setting of pediatric obesity, we recommend focusing on the five following areas in the diet history. 1. Assess who the primary food preparer is. 2. Assess generally who brings what food into the house. 3. Ask about desserts and snacks to evaluate frequency of eating. 4. Ask about juice and soda to evaluate for empty calories. 5. Try to get a sense of the portion size that your patient consumes. As we interpret the diet history, it's important to be aware of the patient's conscious and unconscious motivations. There's typically a desire to please the provider and avoid shaming. This may cause patients to underreport unhealthy food. Specifically, in pediatric obesity, parents can feel lots of guilt related to their parenting and their own lifestyle habits. In fact, if mom is overweight, her child is 3 times more likely to be obese. The key in these situations is to support and empower the parent to think they can create efficacious changes. Finally, it's important to uncover discrepancies between the patient's current behavior and future desires. For example, the provider asked Alex if eating pancakes will help him run faster. When patients are confronted with these discrepancies, it can make them more compelled to make specific changes. Since it was Alex who realized he should make this change, he's more likely to stick with it. Part 5, closing.
Okay, so Alex, can you remind me what changes you were going to make to be able to run faster?
I forgot.
Why don't you think about it for a minute?
So I think, 1, no juice or soda, drink water. 2, no Takis, chips, or salsa after school. 3, carrots and celery and vegetables during brunch.
Wow, Alex, that's great.
Alex, good job.
Okay.
Doc, do you think that's enough for him to lose weight?
To be honest, I think losing weight requires gradual changes. I've counseled a lot of patients who struggle because they try to change everything about their diet at once, and it really doesn't work. I would rather we make these 3 changes today and talk about the meals you eat as a family when you come back in 1 month.
We have to come back for this? I can't miss more work.
I understand. We'll try to have the front desk schedule something that can work for you. We can even schedule our next follow-up for when you have to come back for the flu shot. But Mom, I want you to know that this is really important. Childhood weight can predict heart disease and diabetes in the future. I wouldn't call you back if this wasn't really important for Alex.
Okay, Doc.
Okay, thanks everyone. I'm looking forward to seeing you in a month, Alex.
Pearl 5, closing. The wrap-up at the end of the appointment is important to make sure the provider and patient are on the same page about upcoming changes and to schedule a follow-up appointment. To make sure the provider and patient are on the same page, it's helpful to have the patient repeat back what they understood. This closed-loop communication increases the likelihood that the patient will implement what was talked about in the clinic visit. Creating follow-up appointments for chronic medical issues such as obesity can be tricky. Understandably, patients are often resistant to missing school or work to talk about non-urgent issues. Make sure to emphasize the importance of regular follow-up for chronic health issues by reminding patients about the potential outcomes of untreated obesity, diabetes, hypertension, etc. When deciding on how often to follow up, take into account some upcoming lab draws, med refills, or other routine medical needs of the patient. You can garner some goodwill with your patient if you explain that you would like to save them time by coupling their next weight appointment with a sports physical or their next flu shot. If you need to order routine screening labs, you can also call on the patient to discuss these results and do a simultaneous weight check. Finally, communicate specific agenda items for the next appointment. For example, in today's visit, the provider introduced Alex's weight as unhealthy and supported the family in making small changes. In the next visit, the provider could assess how these changes are going, introduce exercise as a component of weight loss, and refer the patient to a dietitian if the child continues to gain weight rapidly. Okay, wow, that was a lot. I hope that felt realistic and was helpful for you. Let's recap some key points from this podcast. 1, in the introduction, remember to stick to BMI percentiles. The provider's and parent's visual assessment of the child can be misleading. Use neutral words like healthy weight to start the visit off on the right foot. 2, motivational interviewing. It's hard and can feel time-consuming. Ask open-ended questions and get the patient to address their positive and negative motivators. 3, linking desires to behavior change. Empower your patient with statements like, "You know yourself best," when encouraging them to come up with changes they can make. Remember to limit the amount of information that you offer. Patients know that vegetables are good and soda is bad. 4, diet history. Remember that pediatric obesity is unique in that patients don't have the means to buy all of their own food. Investigate patient access to food. Remember what foods are marketed to kids, such as breakfast cereals and juice, and make sure to address these. 5, closing. Get buy-in for a follow-up appointment. Garner goodwill with your patients by setting a clear agenda for the next visit and by grouping their upcoming medical needs. Thanks for listening, and see you next time. This podcast was made possible by the support of the California Area Health Education Center Program and the Medical Scholars Fellowship by Stanford University School of Medicine. Special thanks to Dr. Tracy Rydell, Dr. Neela Parikh, and Virginia Fouts for their feedback and support. Thank you to Charlotte Dubach-Reinhold, Victor D. Ragsdale, Leah Slang, and James Seifert for their superb acting.